Hello, and welcome to Tech Access Weekly, a podcast of unspecified length concerning news and events in accessible technology. It's Sunday, September 13th, 2009. Hi folks, and this is our third episode. It's just gonna be me this time because I still can't convince Rodney to get in on the action. Although he still is researching the stories, he's kinda hesitant to get involved in the discussions. I guess he'll just have to miss out. These first couple of stories concern Google. So this first one concerns Google and its relationship with newspapers. As we all know, newspapers are in big trouble because not a lot of people are subscribing to them. You have to pay for their content, and you don't have to pay for content in other places. So the Newspaper Association of America has been concerned about this, understandably, and newspapers who belong to this have been working on ways to charge for their content online, because people are not getting the print copies anymore. They're just going online, and a lot of newspapers have online content, but don't charge for it. So this is a market that they want to explore. So what has ended up coming out of all of this is that these newspapers have sent proposals to various technology companies like Google, Journalism Online, etc. And these companies have written back proposals, have sent proposals to various newspapers on how they would help them charge for their paid content. Google in particular has gotten involved in this. What they've decided to do is that in the future, maybe about a year from now, if people go to newspapers' websites and view content, some of the content will be paid content. So what will end up happening is that when you view a story, you'll be taken also to Google checkout and asked to pay a required fee. Depending on what you're viewing, it can be nominal, like a few pennies or a few dollars. And they haven't set particular specifics on this because it hasn't been implemented yet. I was interested in this from an accessibility standpoint because I'm not sure how accessible Google checkout is and how easy it will be for blind people such as myself to make payments with this. If anyone has any experience with Google checkout and knows about it from an accessibility standpoint, I'd love to hear from you on this. Please feel free to email us with that information. The next story about Google is taken from the TechCrunch blog. If you've got a Google Voice account, you already know that you have the ability to have your messages, your voicemail messages, transcribed and sent to you via email. A lot of people have taken advantage of this and really like it, but some have requested that Google provide a way in which not only to transcribe and email you those messages, but also email you inbound text messages, so that if someone texts your number and leaves you a text message, you will also get it in your email box. People have requested this feature, and it has been implemented. I have not tested this feature, but I think it is very exciting, and hope to see more features added to Google Voice in the future. Moving from a free product, we now move to an expensive product. This is the iPod Nano. Steve Jobs made his first appearance last Wednesday after medical leave at the Apple annual music event, in which he announced several upgrades and new products. In particular, an upgrade to iTunes, and the biggest announcement, the upgraded iPod Nano. This is, of course, a version of the iPod, and it has several new features. Not only is the iPod Nano somewhat affordable, but now it also has a camera, in addition to video playback and something it, I think, has had for a while, a speaker in which, you can listen to music without having headphones. Other additions to the iPod Nano are an AM/FM radio, a microphone for voice recording, and a pedometer for tracking your steps if you're taking your iPod on a walk or an exercise. The 8-gig model is going to cost $150, and the 16-gig model is going to cost $180. Yet another new product. Asus is planning to launch a new e-reader. Actually, its first e-reader. The e-reader market has been growing by leaps and bounds ever since Amazon announced its Kindle. Many companies have joined in, like Sony, and there are a couple of new companies, one of which is called Plastic Logic, that are planning to come out with some large screen e-readers later on. This new Asus e-reader, it is going to have a digital camera in it, as well as a microphone and the ability to make inexpensive Skype calls. Oh, and did I mention that it's going to have a speaker? I don't know if it's going to have voice-activated menus and other guidance, but it will have, I guess, the ability to read an audio. I don't know much more about it than that. And it's going to also, I think it's going to look really cool, because it's going to fold up like a book, instead of being one large screen. This last product is very exciting. It is called the Blind Aid, and it is a product that will give blind people virtual maps of environments before they go out exploring. This product was unveiled at the 2009 National Rehabilitation Conference, and it was also demonstrated at that time. The Blind Aid was developed by a woman from Tel Aviv University. She developed it in concert with a couple of people from MIT. The way in which it works is that there is a map on the computer screen of a virtual environment, and then you have a joystick connected to a device. You can feel on the device a 3D version of your environment. It will distinguish between different surfaces on which you will walk, like grass and tile and pavement. If the terrain is mapped well enough, will give you an idea of certain obstacles that may be in your way and certain things that might be around you, like certain shops and buildings. A woman was able to successfully use this at the Carroll Center for the Blind in Massachusetts to navigate the campus. This seems like a very promising aid to independent mobility for blind people. We're dependent now on cues from others when we navigate. It seems like it may take a while for maps of sufficient detail to be developed, but once they are, it could be a very exciting new mobility avenue for us to explore. There is no pricing information about this product yet available that I can find, but again, it is called the Blind Aid. That information may become available hopefully soon. Not only are we becoming more independent in virtual environments here with this Blind Aid, but also college textbooks are becoming more and more accessible to us. This is a wonderful thing. I remember when I was in college and most of the stuff had to be read on tape, and I may or may not have had it on time. The Access Text Network, along with Intuit Corporation, are collaborating together to ensure that publishers provide more efficient access to their textbooks and course materials to blind individuals. This sounds like a great venture. I'm not sure how many publishers have participated in it thus far, but if it can really get up and rolling and publishers can be convinced to participate, it will make it much easier for blind students to access their textbooks and have it done efficiently. So, particularly if you're a student, it might be good to keep tabs on the development of this venture. I have truly saved the best product for last. This is completely awesome. From ThinkGeek, you can now buy stuffed, plush, cuddly little microbes. They are about 5 to 7 inches long, and of course are replicas of microbes blown up to millions of times their size. I believe this product was essentially created to educate blind children about science, but anyone can enjoy these, especially if you're a kid at heart. They sell about 34 different kinds of microbes, ranging anywhere from a mold to common diseases such as a common cold or the regular flu. And of course, they have the swine flu microbe, H1N1, for sale as well. I think this whole idea is just fantastic. I, for one, have always wanted to know what different microscopic organisms look like, so I will probably be purchasing some of these for my own enjoyment and amusement. And ranking high on the list will definitely be the swine flu virus, so I can tell everyone that I have the swine flu. This next segment concerns identity and privacy, and I would like to begin with a special interest story here. There was a gentleman in Florida who went to a Bank of America branch and tried to cash a check. In order to do that, the bank teller said that they needed a thumbprint. But there was one problem with that. He has no arms, so he could not give a thumbprint. The management would not let him cash the check. I'm not exactly sure how this all ended, because he was on the Today Show to talk about this, and I missed the segment. But this does bring up a good point, that corporations who are going to require you to have thumbprint or handprint verifications of your identity will need to come up with an alternate format if people don't have arms or hands or have limited arm or hand mobility. And I can guarantee that this is something that most companies and organizations haven't even thought of. Switching gears a little bit from the semi-private world of banks to the public world of the federal government, it is quite disturbing what the Department of Homeland Security is entitled to collect about you, information-wise. The Department of Homeland Security has something called the Automated Target System, and what this system does, it assesses the risk that certain individuals will be engaging in terrorist activity while on U.S. soil. This not only applies to individuals from other countries, but also to U.S. citizens who fly in and out of the country. This system checks things such as your credit card number and purchases, your hotel accommodations, the number of frequent flyer miles you have, and any other information that the airline can track about you. Perhaps most disturbing, in my point of view, is the credit card piece, but also the fact that it can check your IP address and monitor your activity on the internet. I am not sure if Homeland Security automatically receives this information about everyone traveling in and out of the U.S., or if it just receives and acts upon the information from certain people who are already under suspicion of terrorist activity. Regardless, it is a rather disturbing thought. It's especially disturbing for those of us who just go about our business and don't have any terrorist links to think that the Homeland Security Agency will be looking in on all of our private information. Speaking of privacy, we have to talk about social networking in this context. President Obama, in a speech to students at a high school in Wakefield, Virginia, told them that they must beware of their activities on Facebook. He stated that anything that they do, whether it's what they post or things they engage in, can be accessed by their future employers or colleges to determine whether they will be hired or accepted. He only mentioned Facebook in this list of social networks. He singled out Facebook and did not mention anything else, for instance, MySpace or Twitter. So I'm unsure whether he specifically wanted to single out Facebook or whether he was using Facebook as an overarching term for social networks in general. Social networking can not only, of course, have these negative consequences, but it is also a very positive tool. There is a new social network that has been developed called Parentela. It is a way in which teachers and parents can collaborate concerning the education of children. So, for instance, teachers can post to the site and make parents aware of any news or events going on in the classroom. Also, they can post regarding the course material that the students are learning at school. And parents can monitor this. Also, I believe parents can make the teachers aware of any problems or issues that they may be experiencing as well regarding their child's education or attendance. I find this extremely fascinating. I do not have children, but I do work with our county school board regarding compulsory attendance violations, and it is amazing to me how many parents either A, don't know that their child has not been going to school, or B, aren't aware of what their child should even be learning in school. So I think this is a great site, provided that parents and teachers can participate in it and are willing to do so. I'll end on a light, whimsical note. It's also kind of disturbing, though, because you wonder, what were they thinking? In Columbus, Ohio, Two people were outside their apartment when three people came up and robbed them at gunpoint, taking their wallets with them. A couple hours later, one of the robbers came back to the apartment, knocked on the door, and asked his female victim for a date. The victim recognized him immediately and was able to have her cousin call 911. And fortunately, 2 minutes later, the guy was arrested by police. But again, I ask you, what was he thinking? This wraps up the podcast for this week. I hope you've enjoyed it, and thank you very much for listening. To contact the team for Tech Access Weekly with comments or suggestions, please email us at techaccessweekly@gmail.com, or you can visit our website at techaccessweekly.com.